Blog Talk Radio. Carol the Coach. Sex, love, and relationships. We talk about it here.
Carol the Coach. Compassion with contemporary relevance.
I am a psychotherapist. I can be your personal life coach, and I can help you with your issues. There are no problems too small or too big. You can talk about anything.
Speaker, columnist, radio TV host, and commentator. Carol the Coach brings messages of wellness and empowerment within reach of everyday people every day.
Almost 5 years ago, I lost my soulmate in an accident. He was killed in a plane crash. Life just for me has seemed to stop.
There are groups all over the city. I mean, I teach one. It is a specific way to start thinking so that you shift how you see the world, which then shifts your energy, and then you feel better and you actually see things differently.
Carol the Coach, always available to at carolthecoach.com.
Now I've got Russell on the line.
I'm 47 years old. I'm a truck driver. I'm married. I have a wife in San Francisco.
Okay.
I haven't been home in 6 months. My thing is, I don't know if I have a sex addiction or what the problem is. Why do I want what I can't have? And as soon as I can have it, I don't want it anymore.
You're right on target when you say, I don't know if I have a sexual addiction. Well, guess what? Yes, you do. And you know what? That's my specialty, Russell. So you're at the right place. Continue.
I meet women online, and I'm in a different part of the country. I travel all 48 states, so I love sex.
I hear self-esteem issues. You never felt good enough, and you didn't feel like you were getting what you should have then, and you're reenacting that now. Do you want to change that about yourself?
That's right. Do you want to change that about yourself? This is a show that talks about how you can learn to recover from sexual addiction. And we talk about all sorts of avenues to make that happen. Some people use talk therapy. Some people use 12-step recovery groups. Some people use EMDR. And tonight, we're going to be talking with Dr. Robert Miller, who is going to be talking about the Feeling State Addiction Protocol and the formula that he has found most effective, which eliminates the underlying cause of sex addiction. And so I've studied with this man. I think he's a genius in terms of what he is tapping into, and asked him to come on the show and talk about this type of therapy so that if you seem to have tried everything, whatever reason you are having difficulty figuring out how to really manage this, I got to tell you, I think it's a combination of all the above, but what you're going to learn tonight about this protocol and about what we are focusing on in this protocol will make a whole lot of sense to you. So stay tuned. Dr. Miller is going to be on here in about 15 minutes. Okay, I got an email from a woman, and she says, "Hello, Carol. I suffer from a very interesting sexual disorder. I can relate with some of the symptoms of sexual addiction, such as bouncing around from partner to partner and engaging in sexual situations that are unhealthy and potentially risky. It is different in that I don't crave sex regularly. In fact, I only crave it when I am single and if it's with new partners. When I'm in a relationship, I find myself completely disinterested and almost disgusted by sex. I have never cheated on a partner and do not intend to start anytime soon, but the interest is incredibly disheartening. I was sexually abused as a child and know that it bears significant weight in my lack of interest, and it will be the demise of any relationship that I get into. I don't want to go back to engaging in risky behavior with multiple partners. Please help. And what do I classify this as? Well, I'm going to call you Kay. Kay, you are addicted. It would seem that you're addicted to the risk-taking and the seduction of captivating a partner. And then once you have that partner, you no longer are interested in sex. And that form of sexual addiction is called seduction sex addiction. You're interested in the seduction of. And so what do? Well, you treat it as you would almost any other sexual addiction. You keep yourself out of those situations because they aren't particularly healthy. They don't promote good relationships. And then you work on the sexual abuse issue from your childhood. I believe, Kay, that this is probably the result of you not feeling safe. And what sex addicts and partners, for that matter, need is to feel safe, to feel connection, and to feel trust. And when you were sexually abused as a child, you lost all three of those components to healthy relationships. So now you've figured out a way to control the situation by seducing somebody and then becoming disinterested. And when you're in a relationship, you become disinterested because it's really a form or a fear of intimacy. You know, there are five fears of intimacy. And you tell me, Kay, whether any of these apply to you, as developed by Dr. Pat Sheehan, are: one, fear of being hurt; two, fear of hurting others. Now, it makes sense that people don't want to get close because they're going to get hurt, but let's look at the other side of the coin. There are people that don't want to get close because they're afraid of hurting others. Then there is fear of rejection, fear of abandonment, and fear of merger. Now, of course, fear of abandonment means you're afraid if you get so close, then what will happen? You'll get hurt. And what's the opposite of that? Fear of merger. You're afraid if you get too close, you're going to lose your sense of self. And unfortunately, partners that fear merger hook up with people that fear abandonment. And that's what Pia Melody talks about so eloquently in her book on love addiction. She calls it love pursuance and love avoidance. Now, that last fear of rejection, is just fear of really not being good enough. And so you don't get close because you really don't deserve to have somebody love you. And so you avoid that at all costs. Okay, those are the five fears. And Kay, I would ask you, having been sexually abused as a young child, do you think that you fear being hurt again? I mean, I would suspect that that's a normal feeling, and I would wonder what's going on there. And so do you perhaps take control because you want to be in charge? You're tired of being taken advantage of and exploited. Now, interestingly enough, Dr. Miller would talk about something else. He would ask you, what is the feeling that you're getting from this seduction process? And then he would target that feeling. And through a series of exercises, whether it be EMDR or intensive questioning, we would get to the root of, believe it or not, feeling that is emoted when you are acting out in sexually addictive behavior. Okay, so, Kay, I hope that helps. Feel free to email me at carolthecoach@AOL.com. Let me know if you have any other questions. I know it's scary to call the show. Dear God, we got 230,000 active open downloads a week. But it's very difficult to get people to call the show. Understandably, they're afraid that they will lose their anonymity. I respect that. Send me an email. I'll change your name. Kay is not her real name. Sometimes you give me a name. Sometimes you say, oh, just call me anything. But I appreciate your question. It was a good one. and I can hear that you're in pain, and so I want you to get some help. Now, you know who else is in pain? Is partners. Partners are in pain. They really worry about whether their addict will continue to act out. So there are these myths. There's these myths about the process of a sexual abstinence contract that many couples engage in initially when they're working on sexual recovery from sexual addiction. And partners' typical objections to an abstinent contract, kind of interesting. You know, the neurochemistry podcast on the ITAP website mentions an abstinence contract, but it doesn't outline the partner's responses. So Marnie Faree wrote out some of the counterpoints to each objection, and she wanted to share them with our listserv, and I thought, hey, I'll share them too. She is the director of Bethesda Workshops and does a really nice job of working with clients who have sexual addiction and working with partners who deal with loved ones of sexual addiction. So, you know, one of the objections to an abstinence contract is if we're not having sex, the addict will more than likely act out. Marnie says, you are powerless over the addict's behavior. It's not the partner's job to keep or influence the addict to not act out. That's totally the addict's responsibility. Or how about this one? Sex is a way I can control, reward, punish the addict. A great tool for me, says the partner. Response, using sex manipulatively isn't honoring to yourself and doesn't promote sexual health. Objection number three, sex is the barometer for our relationship. Response, well, then it's an extremely poor one. Just because you're having sex or having great sex doesn't necessarily have anything to do with the health or connection in your relationship. How has this barometer worked during all the time you now know the addict was acting out? Isn't that the truth? I work with so many partners that had a very good sexual relationship. And they connected the dots and really felt like sex and sexual acting out had something to do with their own sexual relationship, and it doesn't. It has to do with the sex addict and who he or she thinks that they are. Sex is our best or maybe only connection. Response, how does that feel to you? Do you really want to accept sex as the only or best glue in your relationship? What does that say about your value as a person, about how your addict views or treats you? And last but not least, sex is something I enjoy, and I don't want to be deprived of it just because of the addict's issues. Yeah, so many partners say, why should I be punished? Because my addict partner wants to stop acting out and has chosen an abstinent contract to do it. Response, enjoying the physicality of sex and having healthy sex within a relationship aren't necessarily the same things. Many, probably all or at least most, active sex addicts aren't present during partnered sex. Is that okay with you? Perhaps you might benefit from exploring your own ideas and attitudes about sexuality to see if your sexual experiences with your addict are congruent with what you intend or what you would like them to be. You know, what we try to do when we ask an addict to sign an abstinence contract is to calm down his or her reward center. When that gets calmed down, then you can make new neurocircuitry in the brain. And when that occurs, and it takes 3 to 5 years to do so, you have a recovered addict. Now, when I say recovered, it doesn't mean they stopped being an addict, but they certainly have worked the tools to manage their own recovery. And so oftentimes, because so many people fantasize about their sexual addiction while they're having sex with their partner, we ask for that abstinence contract to calm down that reward center. So if you've read about or wondered why, we would ask the couple not to engage in sex. I'm here to tell you that's the reason why. And I hope that makes sense, because clearly that is so important for some sex addicts. You know, there's not a one-size-fits-all. And so I don't ever want you to feel like there is. And very, very clearly, what really helps is when there are lots of different tools that we can then customize a program specifically for the addict and his loved one. And when we can do that, because of course we are certified sex addictions therapists, you'll have more of an opportunity to get the quickest benefit. So appreciate the tools that we have to offer, and I hope you do too. That's what this show is all about, is helping others with the tools. And, you know, I feel so blessed to be able to do that, to help others with the tools so that they can get healthy. Because trying to do it on your own sure doesn't work. And I happen to know that it is imperative for addicts to know what tools work best for them. All right. I am going to ask you and my guests to call 646-595-3284 if you have any questions or you want to make a comment. That is important, 646-595-3284. That's what this show is all about, is getting to the root of the problem and, you know, feeling like you got some support. It is so difficult to not have support. So I so appreciate your call, and I appreciate your emails. You know, you can go to my website at www.sexhelpwithcarolthecoach.com. Anytime you want, you can take the SAST and decide if you have a problem. There are plenty of recovery tools that help you get healthy and make a real difference in your own life and the life of everybody else you affect. You know, you got to do it for yourself, but clearly it doesn't hurt to do it for yourself and other people too. And they've done a lot of research, and they said, hey, you know, I'm not tracking this. I want to know how you can actually want to recover from addiction for somebody else. And there's a lot of research that indicates that actually that's a real good reason to quit, to do it for your loved one or your partner. And then, you know, what ends up happening is once you get involved in the program, you may actually decide, wow, I really want to do it for me. And so, truly, it makes a lot of sense to want to stop for somebody else and eventually work on it for yourself. Okay. Having trouble stopping the urges? I'm going to talk to you about the Feeling State Protocol for Sexual Addiction as we wait for Dr. Robert Miller to join our program. And you can call 646-595-3284 at any point to ask your questions or to comment about what you're learning. It takes a lot of guts to ask the right questions, but the more you invest in your sexual addiction, the better you'll do. The more you'll get out of the show, and the more you'll learn. And that's really why we encourage getting with a certified sexual addictions therapist or, you know, very, very understandably, going to 12-step meetings because they're so helpful in recovery. And I really appreciate all that that has to offer. And so fellowship and having a sponsor is so important to making that happen too. You're listening to Carol the Coach. This is Sex Help with Carol the Coach. And I've got Dr. Robert Miller on the line. Dr. Miller, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Absolutely. Hey, now tell me a little bit about this controversy about whether sexual addiction is real. What's been your clinical experience in regards to sexual addiction?
I've seen people whose lives have been destroyed by it. Marriages have been destroyed, careers have been destroyed, because they can't stop doing it. They have a compulsion. So, yeah, I think it's really real.
Well, I, of course, agree with you, or I wouldn't have been certified in it. And the controversy just really continues. Obviously, it wasn't included in the DSM-5. We're hoping that the next time they revise it, they will put that in just as they have gambling this time around. Tell me what you believe is the difference between the conventional treatment for sex addiction, you might have heard me talking about it earlier, and your treatment with the Feeling State Addiction Protocol.
Carol, the Feeling State Addiction Protocol actually gets to the cause of the sexual addiction. It's not a disease. It is a fixated memory. Is a positive fixated memory. For example, I had one man whose the feeling he had linked with sexual behavior was a feeling of acceptance. And every time he had sex with a person for the first time, he felt a very intense feeling of acceptance. And then, but it was only linked to having it for the first time with that for him. With first time with a woman. And what that meant is he had to keep doing it again and again. And so what we're talking about here is if you break the link between the positive feeling people are looking for and the behavior, which is whatever form of sex addiction they got, they stop having the sex addiction. Because the real cause of the sex addiction is what we call a feeling state. The feeling state is defined as that positive feeling linked with that behavior. And when you break that apart, the people are not interested. Because what they always wanted was the feeling, not the behavior. And I can't emphasize that enough. The reason why people have any kind of compulsion like this is because they're looking for the feeling that they've linked with that behavior. And when you break that feeling from the behavior so that they're no longer connected, people are not interested in that behavior in that way anymore.
And one more time, you said for this man, the feeling was what?
Acceptance.
Acceptance. And so
right.
That was the feeling. What were his thoughts?
You know, he didn't really, in terms of what he was thinking, he wasn't. All he knew was he had an urge to have sex with another person. That's all he was aware of. And
right.
In therapy, we were able to figure out that many years ago, when he was in college, he had this experience where this woman he wanted to have sex with kept him as a friend for a long time. And finally, she had sex with him. And the feeling of that feeling of acceptance for him was so intense, it got locked into first-time sex for him. And that's what he kept living out. From that point on, he just kept, it was living out the same time. He was looking for that really intense feeling of acceptance, and he just had to have sex first for a first time with a woman in order to get that powerful, positive feeling he wanted so badly. But he wasn't aware of it until he got into therapy.
Got it. And so if you can help somebody to identify what that feeling is that they're actually craving, then what? What do you do next?
Well, then we do a modified form of EMDR, because EMDR is well proven to work with traumas. A trauma is a fixated memory. But a trauma is a negative fixated memory. In other words, there's pain, there's fear, it hurts, there's a lot of negative emotions surrounding it, but the trauma has fixated in the brain. And the EMDR breaks that fixation and allows the brain to begin to process that trauma, process that memory. And what I discovered is that a compulsion like a sexual compulsion also has a fixated memory. It's just that instead of having being created during a trauma, it's created during a very super intense positive experience. And that super intense positive experience becomes fixated in the person's mind, and they keep living it out. And by using a modified form of the EMDR protocol, you can break that fixation. And the person comes to their senses.
Well, and I was going to say, for many of our listeners, they may not know what EMDR is. So EMDR is eye movement.
Desensitization and reprocessing.
Reprocessing. Right, and it's now considered a therapy as opposed to a technique. And it uses bilateral stimulation, which means that your eyes move in a certain direction as you go back to the link. And so instead of taking the person back to the trauma, you take them back to that initial feeling that was actually the addiction itself, right? I mean, it's the feeling they're addicted to, not the behavior.
Yes, it's fixated. The feeling is linked with that behavior, which is why they keep doing the behavior in order to get the feeling. But if the feeling is broken from the behavior, they're not interested in the behavior anymore, period.
Well, you know, it's interesting because obviously drug addicts, alcoholics, and sex addicts typically get a high from their behavior that first or second time that is never, ever manifested again in that same intensity. But they keep going after it, looking for it over and over and over again. So I'm wondering if that's the same thing with someone, let's say, that their link is acceptance. That's what that actually captivated them, and that's why they go after sexual addiction, to feel that. We call that seduction therapy, where they're seducing somebody to find that acceptance. Do you believe that they can ever find that acceptance again and again and again?
No, they actually, they are chasing the dragon.
Okay.
It never happens. It just never happens again. You know, but they keep doing it because that's in their mind, that, you know, in their unconscious mind, the idea is that I need acceptance. Or it could be other feelings. You know, it could be admiration. It could be intimacy. It could be belonging. It could be any feeling that a person desperately wants. And the problem, of course, is that's what's locked in the brain. But as you said, they don't get it. But it keeps, the drive is there anyway.
Now, did I hear you correctly? Did you say it could be frustration?
No, I didn't say frustration.
Okay, I didn't think so, because that would be a negative state.
Right. It could be admiration.
Admiration, okay.
So, for example, here's an example of admiration. When a 16-year-old boy got together with a bunch of his buddies in high school and decided that they were going to have a contest to see who could have sex with the most number of women. And Unfortunately for him, he won. And unfortunately, because that was the beginning of a sex addiction. He was, you know, everybody, he got all this admiration. He was the man. High fives all around. It was, you know, you're the man. He was a big man on campus. 10 years later, he's still doing the same thing. Still doing the same thing. Because what's happening is he has to chase down women, get their cell phone number, has a date with them, has sex, and all that. He's not really even that interested in the sex. Because what happens then after he has sex, he goes, tells a friend that he had sex with another woman. And that's when it's high fives and you're the man, big man on campus. He's really living those high school days. That's what he's looking for. And it's admiration. And he's still acting like that 16-year-old he used to be. And by breaking apart that feeling of admiration from having sex, he was able to get control of his life for the first time.
Okay, because I was going to ask you, clearly you said once you figure out what the feeling state is, you target it for some modification of EMDR. And so you take them back to that earlier experience and you have them bilaterally think back to that feeling. And then at what point do they feel that shift, that understanding of what they were doing?
After we've identified what the feeling is they're looking for, I have them hold in their mind very intensely that feeling they're looking for and imagine doing the behavior. So whatever the particular sex addiction, they imagine it. This is exactly the opposite of what you would normally do. I'm triggering people into that feeling because I want them into that feeling. The feeling and imagining doing that behavior. And when I get them intensely into it, that's when we start the eye movements. And you can watch the change on their face. You can watch the change in their face as you do about 20 passes, let's say, with your eye movements. And then you take a breath and then ask them how things are going, and then you do another set. So usually by the time two or three sets are finished, you can see the change in their face. You can see that it was so excited. They were so excited because they're getting that feeling they wanted. They're really into it. And usually by the third eye movement set, you can watch their face begin to drop, that it's no longer exciting anymore. It's no longer meaningful anymore. And then usually within a set or two, at least after that, they're looking at it like going, what the hell have I been doing? I can't believe I have been doing this all my life. I can't believe I had let this destroy my life. And they really make the shift. You don't have to tell it to them. You don't have to show it to them. They already know it. It's just that they've been living under the cloud of the compulsion, which has clouded their thought pattern. And when they are outside of that compulsion, it just lifts and they go, oh my God, what have I been doing? I've had people say, you know, it's like a nightmare. I can't believe I've been doing this. I can't believe what I've done all my life. And it changes them. And they change. And they're no longer under the cloud of that compulsion.
Yeah, so that you're saying that the feeling state addiction protocol, this protocol that you develop, actually eliminates the underlying cause of the sexual addiction. And then they figure out it's not about the sex at all. It was about the feeling. And I would suspect, at least from our training, that you assist them in finding another way to find acceptance or to find validation, admiration, those kinds of things.
Well, you know what's interesting about that? The guy who was acceptance or admiration, acceptance about the high school, you know, he was actually okay in his life. Once that was gone, he had other means of doing it. I didn't even have to do anything for him. People just go, wow, and they start searching for a new way to do it that's healthy. So if belonging was what was linked with the sex addiction, they find a healthier means to belong. Now, it can be that if there's a lot of trauma or abuse in their background, you need to deal with that. So it's they may have negative beliefs about themselves that say, you know, no one ever wants me, I don't belong, nobody will ever accept me. And you may need, and the therapist and the patient may need to work through those issues so they can go out and find places that they truly do belong, if that's what they want to do. But the addictive part of it, the compulsive part, the feeling state has then been processed, and that makes it possible for them to then work through the underlying issues and find new ways of getting the feeling that they actually want.
That makes so much sense. Now, what about so many of the women sex addicts that I meet feel like they have captivated and seduced their partners, and they end up feeling special and validated? Is special a feeling state?
Absolutely. Okay. It's a very common feeling state, feeling special. You know, when I see the desire that this man wants me, I feel really special. Yes, absolutely, it's a feeling state. And the problem is that the feeling of special may only be like the first time. And so they have to keep doing it again and again. Or here's another possibility. It could be that feeling special is also linked with the type of person who is an abuser. And so they have to find somebody who abuses them, has that kind of personality, in order to have that feeling state of feeling special. And that's what we call a different kind of codependence.
Yeah, you know, the woman that I'm thinking of is college age, and she has desperately wanted her father's affection and has never been able to get it. And so she says, I am addicted to making these men feel important, and they in turn say, I am very, very, very special. Nobody's ever made them feel that way, which of course then makes me feel special. And she says, I'm afraid to give that up. You know, I love feeling special. So there's been a little resistance from her. And in her honesty, I mean, I definitely understand that.
The thing is, if you work through the underlying issue, people actually don't need to feel special. People need to feel special because they feel not good enough inside themselves.
Inadequate. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. And
yeah,
so
and
if you deal with that.
That actually occurred with her father. You know, I mean, she's always felt inadequate because he's never in any way validated her.
Right. And so it can be that before a person is willing to give that up, that they have to deal with some of the issues, like for her involving her father.
Good.
So she can. So she can actually feel good about herself and have a healthy relationship with a man.
Makes total sense. And then, you know, obviously once that fixated memory, the feeling state is processed, her behaviors are just naturally going to change, aren't they?
That's exactly right. You don't have to think about, what am I going to be like without this? You don't have to make a future template. You don't have to develop resources. It will naturally happen. Because you're going back to the natural healthy pattern. It's right there in the person's mind. It's already there. All they have to do is the feeling state is overriding their natural way of being. And when you undo the feeling state, when you break the feeling state, they find the way to go back to their natural way of being that's healthy.
How exciting for you that you discovered this. Because this is really looking at addiction from a totally different vantage point. And it's a much healthier vantage point. You know, you're looking at that positive feeling. How long ago was it that you first discovered this feeling state in addiction?
Well, 2001, I was in my second year in graduate school for my PhD. And I was working on some of my own issues when I discovered it. I was a marriage and family therapist at the time. And I had some clients. It really started not with sex addiction, but with food issues and with a shopping compulsion. And it worked wonderfully with my clients with both of those issues. And then I did my PhD dissertation on it. I might add, you said it was exciting for me. Well, I can tell you, after I had these people's behaviors, my patients' behavior had changed, and I realized that I really had something here, I couldn't sleep for 3 days. I was so excited.
I can imagine, because, I mean, this kind of stuff had never been talked about before.
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, so for you, I want to know, what was the first link for you to go, oh my gosh, there is a positive feeling state associated with this behavior, especially with things like overeating, when typically you think, oh no, that's medicating being alone or being isolated or not feeling good enough. How did you figure it out?
Well, there was one woman I was working with had a problem with pizza. She would eat a whole large pizza all by herself. And as she was 150, 200 pounds overweight, this was pretty significant.
Uh-huh.
And so I asked her, I said, what do you feel when you're about to eat a piece of pizza? And she said, you know, I feel like I'm eating with my whole family. And so I had her feel that feeling and imagine eating the pizza. And we did the bilateral stimulation, the eye movements on it. And it went away. And she came back in the next week and she said, you know, I didn't think anything really had changed. And so I ordered a large pizza. And she said, you know, I'd got about 2/3 of the way through and I could not finish it. And that's never happened, she said. And the only reason she got that far was because she was forcing herself.
Uh-huh.
If you really think about what that means, is that when the feeling state was not there anymore, when the feeling state was not causing a change in her brain, she went back to the natural way of when you overeat, your body starts rejecting it, starts feeling nauseated. But the feeling state was so powerful, it was overriding the body's natural reaction to overeating so that she could overeat that whole pizza all by herself. So when you see, PET scans of the brain, you know, this is your brain on drugs, you know something, or this is your brain in a sexual compulsion, this is your brain on feeling states. This is, it's actually psychological. The feeling states are so powerful that they alter the brain.
Well, that totally makes sense. And you know, that is so interesting with eating disorders, because obviously some of this is very, very measurable. If someone is no longer eating a whole pizza, you know they've made the shift.
Right.
Now, I heard you clearly say you can see it in the midst of processing. You can see the shift by the third or fourth pass. And
yes.
For our listening audience, a pass is after you've done a set of bilateral stimulations. So, okay. Now, how many sessions do you believe, on average, does it take to resolve sex addiction?
You know, I've done it in as little as one, which is unusual, I might add. That's really unusual. And probably 3 or 4 sessions are pretty normal. 5 to 7 are not unusual. Usually what happens, though, usually resolving the sex addiction itself, the feeling state, is probably a 2 or 3 session thing. It takes about 2 or 3 sessions. The problem that you can also have, though, is that there's other issues that begin to surface. Maybe traumas begin to surface that they hadn't thought about. And so you might end up spending some sessions dealing with some other issues as well. But most of the time, I would say that 3 to 5 sessions for most people that I've worked with, and I've now worked with a lot of people for sex addiction. I worked with one guy who had been in a 30-day rehab for sex addiction. He was now in the aftercare program, and he was still struggling with it. And he decided that he'd known about me through somebody else, and he came in to see me. And we actually cured his sex addiction in 2 sessions. There were 2 separate feeling states he had, and when we processed that, he just wasn't interested anymore.
Yeah, that's amazing because, let's face it, you know, the average amount of therapy that a client with sexual addiction needs is anywhere from 3 to 5 years. And so for you to say 3 to 5 sessions, sometimes as little as 1 or 2, rarely, but that's a huge difference. Now, I would suspect that, you know, the client's going to want to see you longer than that, again, to deal, if nothing else, with some of the adjustment issues that occur in their life after they've processed that fixation.
You know, there are a variety of issues. I mean, not only do they have the issues that gave the foundation for the sex addiction to occur, there's also the issues, of course, of, you know, if they've messed up their relationship and what's going on with that. And there's certainly more therapy that's necessary. But the nice thing about it is they're no longer under that compulsion anymore, and they understand it. It's not a moral issue. It's not a character issue. It's not a disease. It is a feeling state. You know, in anybody, you know, there's the old saying, you know, there but for the grace of God go I. Honestly, that's true, because somebody, what happens is somebody has a really intense need for a certain feeling, like admiration or intimacy or acceptance, and they just so happen to get it in a certain way. With sex addiction, they got it that way, and that's what fixated. If it was shopping, it would be that way. If it was gambling, it would be that way. And it's just however you happen to get that feeling, you desperately need it. And it fixates with that behavior, and from then on, you keep living it out. And anybody could be caught by that. As I said, it's not a character issue. It's not a moral issue. It's not a disease issue. It is a learned, it's the type of learning, you might say, that occurs with PTSD when you have a trauma. It's a super intense event occurs, and the brain becomes, learns that particular way of being.
So now let me ask you, obviously, there are triggers, and triggers are those situations that an addict gets into that then light up the reward center and say, act out, act out, act out. So with sexual addiction, do sexual addiction triggers have to be processed?
The answer is no. The reason is that if you clear the feeling state, there's nothing to be triggered. There's nothing to be triggered if you have, so if acceptance is no longer linked with sex addiction, and a trigger could have been going by a massage parlor, it could have been something you see on TV, it could have been pornography, whatever the trigger may have been, there's nothing to be triggered. There's nothing there anymore. And if there's nothing there anymore, there's no triggers. So in feeling state work, we don't process the triggers. All a trigger does is tell you there's some, if a person is still being triggered by something, it means the feeling state is still present. And so you process the feeling state, not the trigger. And once the feeling state is gone, there is nothing for the trigger to work on. People won't even know that there was a trigger.
If somebody is fixated, if a man is fixated by breasts, big breasts, and you have processed that fixation, that feeling, and maybe that is one of intimacy or closeness, then you're saying the next time he sees a big-breasted woman, he's not going to be triggered.
That's right.
He's going to notice the big breast, but it's not going to light up that reward center in the same way.
That is exactly right.
Okay.
The reward center is lit up by the feeling state.
Right, exactly. Now, you know, the goal of most sex addiction therapies is abstinence. What would you say is the goal of feeling state addiction protocol? Is abstinence necessary? I would think not.
If you know something, abstinence is not necessary.
Uh-huh.
It's not necessary before, during, or after treatment. People can be good, as a matter of fact, the people who are easiest to deal with are the ones who are out of control during therapy. Because what happens is, it's easy for them to feel the feeling. Let's say it was acceptance. They let themselves really get into it. They may have just done it, you know, hours before or a few days before, and they can really feel it. And they can imagine, you know, that behavior. And so it's easy for them to do it. And so because they can really get into the feeling, the protocol works very quickly.
Yeah, this almost sounds like a miracle. I'm sure that you've gotten some resistance from clinicians who can't even believe that something could be this quick and easy and effective.
You know, I certainly have. When I first gave this talk at AMDR International Conference, it wasn't just about sex addiction, but addictions in general. People were always were saying, no, you can't happen that way. You know, behavior is grooved. It takes a while to change behavior, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And what it is they never change the feeling state. The reason why it takes so long to change behavior is because you've never cleared the feeling state. The feeling states clear up very quickly, very quickly. I mean, I should say there's changes in the brain that occur very quickly when the feeling state is gone. The brain goes back to its normal way of being, its healthy way of being. And you say abstinence. For the most part, people are just not interested. It's not even about abstinence. Abstinence is an act of will.
Yeah, exactly. It's a contract you make with yourself.
Exactly. And if the feeling of acceptance is no longer linked with having sex for the first time with a woman, if it's not there anymore, you just don't do it. It's just not interesting to you anymore. Now you're back to a healthy pattern. Now you might have sex with a person because you're interested in a relationship, not because you're interested in this, not because you're compelled by the feeling of acceptance.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And you're just not interested. It's kind of like the woman who had a shopping addiction. She had a whole closet full of clothes with shopping tags still on it because she hadn't worn them. And once we cleared it up, she just stopped shopping. I mean, she shopped whenever she needed to, but that was it. You know, now shopping was under her rational mind.
Okay, that was going to be a question I was going to ask you, because I wondered if people relapse when they've experienced the feeling state addiction protocol.
Well, what can happen? Once you clear the feeling states, then that's just gone. They don't come back.
Okay.
You've cleared the, okay. Now, sometimes a behavior does double duty, meaning that let's suppose that not only do you use sex addiction for feeling of acceptance, but every time, let's say that you feel anxiety, you have to go out and seek sex. Now, that's a very different drive there. You may say, okay, I've got to go get sex but you're trying to cover up the anxiety. And that's actually a separate issue. And that's where other therapy you're going to need to do is to deal with, well, when you're anxious, you know, how are you going to handle it now? And if there's some overwhelming anxiety that's occurring, you want to look into other areas of their life, their childhood perhaps, that's causing that anxiety. And then so that when they, you know, everybody's going to have problems with anxiety at times in their life, or depression, or being angry, or sad, disappointed. Everybody has this. The question is, what do you do with it? And for a lot of people who have any kind of compulsive behavior, it has done double duty. It both acts to give them that feeling they're looking for, and as a way of avoiding it. So sometimes it works one way, sometimes it works the other way. And so what I've found is that if a person has been going down, down, down in the behavior, they're just not doing it anymore. And all of a sudden it spikes. All of a sudden they're doing it a lot more, whether it's shopping or drinking or sex, whatever it is. I've always been able to find that something has happened in their life that has really upset them. And they're using that as a means of covering it up. And if you start processing whatever it is, that they're trying, the feelings that they were trying to avoid that way and process it, they stopped doing that behavior, whatever it was.
Okay. That totally makes sense. Now, I want to talk a little bit about your program, because how many therapists have you trained in this protocol?
I've trained probably about 1,300 or 1,400 therapists at this time. I'm not saying that they're all good at it. You know, everybody, you know, it's kind of like with any people take the can take the workshop, that doesn't mean that they've really made an effort to learn it, because it really does take some real effort. Therapists are used to looking for the negative. They're used to looking for trauma.
Mm-hmm.
And they have to train themselves to look for the positive, to discover what the feeling state is. Because if you don't find the feeling state, you can't solve the problem. It really isn't magic. You really do have to find what the feeling is that they're really looking for. But once you do it, then it does seem magical. And if people want to see if there's a therapist in their area who has had this workshop.
That's exactly my next question,
okay.
Yeah.
They can go to my website and download a list of therapists who've had the feeling state protocol workshop. It's on my website.
Okay.
The website is www.fsaprotocol.com. That's www.franksamapple, then the word protocol.com. And you can download a list of therapists across the United States and Europe who have had the training.
Okay. And so there again, they can access some clinicians who have had this training and then pick one to go through this protocol. You're not guaranteeing, because you don't have a certification program, correct? You've got the training program with the workshops, but it's not like they have to work under you for 2 years, kind of like Francine Shapiro with EMDR, or sexual addiction with Patrick Carnes.
You know something, I do have a certification program, and there are a few people who are certified.
Okay.
But you're up in Toronto, right?
No, where I'm in Indianapolis.
Indianapolis.
Okay. You're coming soon.
Okay, Indianapolis. Yes, I will. There's some people from Indianapolis who I have trained, and you mm-hmm. can download that list from my website. And I will be in Indianapolis this fall, training some more people there.
Excellent. Yes, because I know that there are people that are going to want to try this feeling state protocol. You know, I mean, it makes so much sense. Why wouldn't they? And then there are clinicians that listen to the show that may never have heard about this. And I know that you are, you know, you're working on so many new therapy techniques. I mean, you've got this IMTT therapy technique for OCD, and I mean, you're just working diligently on finding ways of helping people the most efficiently that you can.
Yeah. The image transformation therapy, which is what you mentioned, the IMTT, I chose to try OCD with it because OCD is one of the most difficult behaviors to deal with. And I've been really successful with it. But it's a totally different approach. It's not the feeling state work. OCD is an anxiety disorder. It's not a feeling state disorder. But it's if somebody's interested in that, they can go to my other website, and that's
www.imtttherapy.com.
That is true. That's exactly it. So if they're interested in OCD or other ways of working with trauma, they can go to that. I'll be doing my first workshop on that, training people on that in Oakland in September. I'll be doing another one in North Carolina in January, and another one in Oklahoma City probably in March or April on that particular. That's a totally different approach than the feeling state work.
Right, I know, but I guess what I'm saying is that you really are constantly looking for effective ways of assisting clients, patients, whatever, in getting healthy. And we so appreciate the work you're doing. You know, I know it can be tough when you're in the beginning states of a new type of therapy, and there can be a lot of criticism because people don't understand it or have trouble believing it. But I've personally trained under you, and I just think you're a genius at the work that you do. I want you to keep at it, and I'm so thankful that you shared your expertise with my listeners and the clinicians that listen as well.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. So you have a great week. We'll see you in, is it September or October that you're going to be here in Indianapolis?
October, I think.
And, of course, this is small potatoes here because the bottom line is that we are heard globally around the world. And so I'm this show's in 33 countries. So truly get on his website and look for a trained therapist and give this information a shot. And if they need you, can they contact you at your email?
Of course they can.
Okay.
My email is
dr.r.miller@gmail.com.
That is it.
dr.r.miller@gmail.com.
Okay. Thank you very much, Carol.
All right. You take
Appreciate
care and
it.
Have a great month.
You too. Bye-bye.
All right. So that is some amazing work by this man who has made it his mission to help people work through all types of addiction. Gambling addictions, eating addictions, drug, of course, sex addiction. I so appreciate the work he does. So if you need any help, you know my number. My email is carolthecoach@aol.com, and I will relay Dr. Miller's information to you. I want you to have a great week, and as I say at the end of every show, there will only be one of you at all times, so fearlessly have the courage to be yourself. We'll catch you next Monday evening at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for more Sex Help with Carol the Coach. Have a great week.